This is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz, your host for Wyoming Catholic College's After Dinner Scholar podcasts. Sitting in a tea room, sick, hungry, depressed, desperate, and emotionally agitated, Rodion Raskolnikov overhears a conversation. It's about the pawnbroker he has frequented and to whom he owes money. The pawnbroker, a woman, is unkind, nasty, but very rich. Kill her, suggests a student. Take her money, and with the help of it, devote oneself to the service of humanity and the good of all. What do you think? Would not one tiny crime be wiped out by thousands of good deeds? For one life, thousands would be saved from corruption and decay. One death, and 100 lives in exchange. It's simple arithmetic. Besides, what value has the life of that sickly, stupid, ill-natured old woman in the balance of existence? Now, the student admits that he is merely proposing a hypothetical. He is, quote, only arguing the justice of it, close quote. Raskolnikov, on the other hand, has been thinking about killing the old woman and using her money to do good for weeks, and the overheard conversation pushes him over the line. Pushes him to commit murder. It all happens in the first 100 pages of Fyodor Dostoevsky's novel Crime and Punishment. The remaining 500 pages of the book detail the results of Raskolnikov's nearly perfect crime on his family, the people around him, and above all, on his own soul. To tell us more about this twisted story of poverty, suffering, utilitarianism, murder, and redemption, we have Dr. Thaddeus Kaczynski. Dr. Kaczynski is academic dean and associate professor of philosophy and humanities here at Wyoming Catholic College, and he's been reading Crime and Punishment with our senior class. Welcome, Dr. Kaczynski. For one life, thousands would be saved from corruption and decay, one death and 100 lives exchanged. It's simple arithmetic. I mean, that could be a motto for the 20th century with World War I, communism, Nazism, where millions died for a so-called better world. Yet Dostoevsky wrote way back in 1866. What was going on in the intellectual and ideological background as he explores Raskolnikov's crime?
Well, one has to remember that Russia was sort of behind the times for a long time. The first kind of modernization and westernization project was inaugurated by Peter the Great in the early 18th century. And with Tsar Alexander II in the mid-1800s, you had further modernization happening in Russia with the liberation of the serfs, with the institution of trial by jury, land reform, and other such things. In a sense, Europeanizing Russia. But at the same time, Russia was still a very folk-oriented culture. Some might call it backwards in the sense that it had an established religion of orthodoxy, which still sort of lived side by side with these modern secularizing and industrializing dynamics. You also had the rise at this time of the intellectual class, inspired by German Romanticism and Enlightenment thinking, the French Enlightenment. And you had currents such as utilitarianism and nihilism and materialism and what might be called a rational egoism, which Dostoevsky saw as acidic ideological poisons that would destroy not only the culture of Russia and its spiritual and ancient orthodoxy, devotion to the land and to the culture, to the folk culture and to Christ, it would also destroy the soul. And so what you have with Crime and Punishment is a portrayal of these insidious radical ideologies and their effect on one very vulnerable character, Raskolnikov, in the backdrop of St. Petersburg and its squalor, poverty, and overall filthiness, in fact, due to this quick and maybe even unnatural urbanization. At the same time, next to wealth and a kind of indifference to of a certain aristocratic class. So Dostoevsky is seeing all this, and he comes up with this brilliant novel to portray it for us.
So you have a Peter the Great's European city is where it's set. Mm-hmm. And of course, the novel begins by saying how hot it is.
Yeah.
This sort of this hellish place, squalor, pandemonium, if you will. And Raskolnikov is kind of testing out, or he's influenced slightly by these European ideas. It's mm-hmm. a European-Russian kind of conflict.
That's right. I mean, he's an intellectual trying to become a scholar, a poor student, as it were. And he's influenced by certain ideas, especially ones having to do with kind of, you know, proto-Nietzschean view of the mass man, the typical ordinary sort of sheeple, as it were, to use a contemporary word, jargon, and those who are kind of special, chosen, who have the ability to act with a world historical consciousness that comes from Hegel, and they're able to act on the scene and even trespass against taboos and the moral order in order to accomplish something that needs to be done. And Raskolnikov is very tempted by this idea. He's wondering if he might be one of these Napoleonic world historical figures. If you combine that with just the utter ugliness, degradation, and injustice he sees all around him, you know, these peasants, this is about the same time as the Emancipation Proclamation in America, with the African-American slaves being liberated. And of course, we know how difficult it was for the reintegration of that huge mass of people into American culture that had excluded them. It's the same with Russia. These peasants, serfs, did not know how to live the kind of middle class bourgeois lifestyle of thrift and self independence and work ethic. And I mean, they didn't have that culture. This was a kind of feudalistic class-based structure. And so when they were liberated and went to the cities, that there wasn't work for them. And of course, it's similar to what Charles Dickens writes about in his novels in 19th century England and the urbanization ugliness there. So Raskolnikov is tempted on all sides here. There's not much beauty and nobility and hope in his life, and so he falls. And Dostoevsky portrays the consequences of that fall. What's interesting in the novel is we don't get any of the background. We start right in medio res with Raskolnikov. We don't know what's really motivating him, why he's considering this murder. We only find that out later in the novel. It's very interesting non-linear modernist type of writing Dostoevsky gives us here. We could talk about that a little later, the deep psychological analysis and his innovative technique in writing this novel.
Well, he's also exploring issues of morality and using his characters to do that. How does he bring that about?
It's not a moralizing novel. This is not straightforward portrayal of the good and the beauty of the good and the evil and the ugliness of evil. For example, Raskolnikov's saving grace is his friendship with Sonia, who is in fact a prostitute and not necessarily a repentant one. I mean, she befriends him in the midst of her behavior. Raskolnikov himself is not simply a psychopathic, you know, wicked person. The complicated psyches that Dostoevsky is amazingly able to portray for us does not give us a black and white portrayal of simply virtuous or vicious acts. Just like in real life, there's mixed motives, there's excruciatingly complex situations and circumstances. This doesn't mean that Dostoevsky is muddying the moral waters. He's simply portraying the way in which the moral law, the logos, the Tao, if you will, is actually encountered and engaged with by real people in real situations. And truly, it is a redemption story, but the multitude of characters in this and their complexity of emotional and and spiritual and psychological circumstances, motivations, is pretty amazing. When one reads Dostoevsky, one is getting a kind of tour de force on the moral order and how it relates to the human order. At the same time, one is getting a deep psychological education in how the individual human person, the idiosyncratic human person, who's like, and no person is like another one, journeys into his soul and makes ultimate choices and the graces that are given also. This is a very, very Christian novel as well, but it's not something that's out in the open and obvious. In this sense, it's like Shakespeare, it's like Flannery O'Connor, other great Christian writers. Yeah, it's something you really have to read to really grasp and experience.
Tell us more about Sonia. Her father's an alcoholic, wicked stepmother forces her into prostitution, and yet she's the source of goodness in the novel and the source of redemption finally at the end. Is he creating sort of a Mary Magdalene character or?
Yeah, well, you know, discussing this with the seniors in humanities class, I had expected a lot of resistance to this character. Strictly speaking, somebody who is living a lifestyle of prostitution cannot be a source of grace for someone. This is someone who is in, to use Catholic terminology, mortal sin. Doesn't matter if there's certain circumstances that made it, that mitigated this. This is a degradation, severe degradation of one's body and soul. So how can a character like this be a conduit of grace and love for another wicked character who committed a murder? And I have to say, regardless of one's caveats, Dostoevsky simply pulls this off. Yes, there's certain analogies with Mary Magdalene, with Sonia, but I guess, again, when you summarize the character and portray it in this way, it doesn't seem possible, and it would seem to be even a kind of an affront against Catholic morality and spiritual truth to have such a character, but nevertheless, she's able to be this. And I guess the reason is her amazing, indescribable, almost self-effacing love and dedication to Raskolnikov. She is the only character in the novel who is able to penetrate into his delusions and his defense mechanisms and get right to the heart of the issue. There's a wonderful scene in the novel where Raskolnikov asks Sonia to read the Lazarus story, the raising of Lazarus, and that becomes a kind of central motif of the whole story, the resurrection of Lazarus. I'll read a little bit from the novel. This is the scene where Raskolnikov has confessed, and she's the one, of course, that he confessed to, the murder. And Sonia says, "And you killed." And Raskolnikov, with a sudden insight into the deed and what he actually did in doing this deed, says, "But how did I kill, really? Is that any way to kill? Is that how one goes about killing, the way I went about it then? Someday I'll tell you how I went about it. Was it the old crone I killed? I killed myself, not the old crone. Whopped myself right then and there, forever. And it was the devil killed the old crone, not me. Enough, enough, Sonia, enough, let me be," he suddenly cried out in convulsive anguish, "let me be." And then Sonia, "Such suffering," burst in a painful wail from Sonia. "Well, what to do now? Tell me," he said, suddenly raising his head and looking at her, his face hideously distorted by despair. "What to do?" she exclaimed, suddenly jumping up from her place, and her eyes, still full of tears, suddenly flashed. "Stand up!" She seized him by the shoulder. He rose, looking at her almost in amazement. "Go now, this minute. Stand in the crossroads, bow down, and first kiss the earth you've defiled, and bow to the whole world, on all four sides, and say aloud to everyone, 'I have killed.' Then God will send you life again. Will you go? Will you go?" She kept asking him, all trembling, as if in a fit, seizing both his hands, squeezing them tightly in her own, and looking at him with fiery eyes. Raskolnikov will, eventually,
do exactly what Sonya commanded him to do, and will find his redemption, including several years of hard labor in Siberia.
And then in that way, it's in some way, it's a fundamentally Christian novel.
Yeah, it's interesting. If you take out the epilogue and you just read the novel without the last part, which was a kind of controversial appendage, because many people think it was a little bit contrived and not as literarily, aesthetically apt, that last part. If you leave out the epilogue, it's a tragedy. And there isn't much sense of hope or redemption, just a certain amount of wisdom gained through immense suffering and crime. But with the epilogue, there's a definite, and I would say that even without the epilogue, it's still a Christian novel. But with the epilogue, it becomes richly redemptive, and I think beautiful. I think the epilogue is a very apt and necessary ending to the story.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Kaczynski. One death and 100 lives in exchange. It's simple arithmetic. Dostoevsky, above all a Christian believer, understood that when man employs this simple arithmetic, he believes in a false gospel, resulting in death, disaster, and devastation. Look at Raskolnikov. Look at the 20th century and perhaps the 21st century as well. But when God employs this same simple arithmetic, we find the true gospel. One death, the death of Christ, resulted in billions of lives in exchange. In preparation for this interview, I read the first few chapters of Crime and Punishment and found that I can't put it down. It is a compelling and timely book. And of course, great books are like that. Join us for more on future editions of the After Dinner Scholar. And please subscribe to us so that you won't miss any. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz.